I would like to read an article for you that was written by my good friend and colleague Michael Tessarian all the way back in 2002, and he's recently updated it, and it's entitled An Address to the Dead. And when you hear this article or read it yourself, I'm sure you'll find a lot of bells ringing in your mind about what is currently going on in this world, and we can't say that we haven't been warned. So here it is. An Address to the Dead by Michael Tessarian. He opens up with a quote from Thomas Paine from his diatribe against King George III, where Paine says, "I rejected that hardened, sullen-tempered Pharaoh of England forever, and disdained the wretch." The article begins, "The present socio-political chaos, 2021, is merely the latest move in the great game played out by the black nobility who expertly employ the ordo ab chao, or order from chaos, strategy to further their personal agendas dating back to an old world order you're not supposed to know anything about. So let's get clear on a few things and remain sane in the midst of growing worldwide insanity. Let's understand that the present-day architects of control continue plying their vile imperialist trade from behind the visible governments and religions of the world. Age after age, the world controllers concoct bogus conflicts to engender an ambience of fear and paranoia, and to ensure that few of you ever become aware of humanity's true enemies. They fund extremists on all sides, and via the headlines, sweep the world's masses up into a frenzy over the latest public debacle. While ignorant mobs tear themselves to pieces, the oligarchic plan for world dominion trundles onwards, unhindered." He's got a quote here from Mark Twain who says, "Next, the statesman will invent cheap lies, putting the blame upon the nation that is attacked, and every man will be glad of those conscience-soothing tactics and will diligently study them and refuse to examine any refutations of them, and thus he will by and by convince himself that the war is just and will thank God for the better sleep he enjoys after this process of grotesque self-deception." And Michael continues, "Every new boogeyman thrown up by the media is the brainchild of the same Black Lodge-funded intelligentsia that once funded Hitler and the Nazis, that concocted the now-shelved Soviet experiment and funded Franco, Pol Pot, Idi Amin, Mugabe, Suharto, Castro, Pinochet, Noriega, and every other inhumane demagogue throughout the world. Frequently, in ancient times and modern, the psychopaths at the top of the political food chain unleash disasters and mayhem to keep you riddled with fear. The great upheavals of history also make you feel alive and part of what's going on. If you react in fear, at least you react. It's all part of a sadomasochistic game of which you pretend to know nothing. It's part of a gigantic Luciferian ritual in which you allow yourself to participate. The black nobility are descendants of the ancient Setian Atenists who, during the evil reign of Akhenaten, lost their thrones of power. They set up a new empire in Britain and have ruled the world from there for generations. The United States are really vassal estates of the black nobility." He's got some pictures of 10 Downing Street in London. "Atenist lion heads on the doors of 10 Downing Street, London, and Council on Foreign Relations headquarters in New York City. The number 10 cryptically connotes Aten or Aton, the Masonic god of light. It is the eye of Aton that we see above the 13th tiered illuminist pyramid on the American $1 note. Both doorways have solar rays emitting from their domes. Are you not sick of voting in despots out to lay waste to your mind, let alone your nation? Will you finally judge these Machiavellian conspirators by their deeds rather than their rhetoric and sophistry? Will you ever sincerely research their origins and agenda and respect those who do?" Here's a quote from Dope Incorporated. "On May 10th, 1982, addressing a celebration at the Royal Institute for International Affairs at Chatham House in London, Kissinger boasted that throughout his career, he had always been closer to the British Foreign Office than to his American colleagues, and had taken all his major policy leads from London. Chatham House is a successor to the old British East India Company and serves as the think tank and foreign intelligence arm of the British Crown. There's another quote from the same source. The sinister element that sets the British oligarchy apart from the popular image of the mafia family is its unshakable belief that it alone is fit to rule the world. The inheritors of the British East India Company, the same British monarchy and some of the same banking houses, have launched the new opium war, just as they did the first, to loot nations, destroy them, and exalt the power of the empire, to become the third and final Rome. Not until David Rockefeller bought himself a U.S. administration in 1976, as the ancient European fondi installed themselves in Wall Street, did narcotics traffic start to become serious business for the world's big banks. And then this is from Vladimir Valerian, the Master Chronology. The Roosevelt family was the largest stockholder in the company, which was a supporter of Hitler. General Electric subsidiaries in Germany assist the process of financing the Nazi empire, together with IG Farben, who contributed as much as 45%. So Michael continues here, a Fabian war of attrition has been operating for a long time now. It started rolling before the Declaration of Independence and Constitution were put before you to slobber over. In fact, the con of the U.S. Constitution simply guaranteed the rights of federal despots such as James Madison, Benjamin Franklin, and Alexander Hamilton, who worked for the interests of the aristocracy of Britain and Europe. It guaranteed privileges granted to the people, or more correctly, to the indentured slaves who pushed the wheel of industry in the corporation known as the United States. It guaranteed that extortion and confiscation on a monumental level could proceed unhindered, either by God or man. It guaranteed that the American masses, which were slaves of the United States Federal Corporation, would be extended liberty to do their corporate master's bidding. It guaranteed they'd labor under a delusion, because as long as men believe they are free, they don't have to actually be free. The war of attrition moves towards its completion, and there is no going back. Because of the unseen hand of conspiracy, which you believe does not exist, ignorance is wall to wall. Logic, truth, and justice have been annihilated, and while you watch your job being downsized or outsourced, the sorcerers dance upon their desks and clink their glasses in triumph. The U.S. Constitution was created on September 17, 1787, and was ratified, behind closed doors, on June 21, 1788. This is an Attenist festival, the summer solstice, when the sun reaches its highest point in the zodiac. The, quote, people are not the citizens of America. Furthermore, American citizens are certainly not sovereign or free. They are merely slaves programmed with an illusion of freedom. They are victims of parchment idolatry. And he's got another article called The Constitution Con. Have you seen their insider smiles? The boss hogs in London are ecstatic with the progress of their lieutenants. So it's knighthoods, medals, and expensive champagne all around. Pearls for the necks of swine. And this is a quote from E.C. Knuth, Empire of the City, Secret History of the British Financial Power, written in 1944. He says, the shelves of our public libraries that hold thousands of books pertaining to some aspect of this vast subject, in running through those networks, some amazing nuggets of information come to light here and there, which fitted together gradually unfold the stunning history and the legal structure of a sovereign world state located in the financial district of the loosely knit aggregation of boroughs and cities popularly known as the City of London. The colossal political and financial organization centered in this area, known as the City, operates as a super government of the world, and no incident occurs in any part of the world without its participation in some form. This one comes from Scott Thompson, The Nazi Roots of the House of Windsor. He says, the British monarchy and the City of London's leading crown bankers enthusiastically backed Hitler and the Nazis, bankrolled the Führer's election, and did everything possible to build the Nazi war machine for Britain's planned geopolitical war between Germany and Russia. So Michael continues, lesson one, the fanatical chiefs of psychotic jihadist sects are backed financially and politically by the black nobility served by so many politicians on the right and left of the spectrum. Dynasties such as the Rothschilds may appear Jewish on the surface, but are in fact Sabbateans and Frankists hiding behind the veil of religious Judaism. What is more, this same cult has seeded its members with the organizations ruling your world. Fifth columnists exist within the Protestant Church and have been there since the beginning, from before the Pilgrim Fathers landed on the Mayflower. After all, where did the Puritans get their money to buy ships and settle in America? Be it the Jesuits on one side and evangelists on the other, the same Masonic cult calls the shots. You dare not change your allegiances because you are far too scared to rock the boat. Instead, you cling like a limpet to your particular dogma, pitting yourself against your counterpart on the other side of the spectrum. You don't hear the laughter of your masters amid the clamor of your own mental racket. To change means to lose the authority which instructs you in every way. It means losing Big Daddy and having to take responsibility for your own life. Better to remain in slave think and do as the puppet masters say. Truth is the world's most destructive thing, and you want nothing to do with it. As long as you have a few cushions in your cell and some salt in your gruel, and as long as you are permitted an opinion or two within the political den created by your overlords, you are okay with a mediocre lifestyle and the regimented predictability of your conformist artificial existence. You have convinced your screaming soul that it is safer and better to just conform and be a repressed, toxic, programmed orc marching to the drumbeat of imperious marshals. As long as one slave can bellow Allah louder than any other screeching anti-Semite, all is well and death can stalk the lands. So sleep well under the shadow of the great double-headed eagle that tears the world and your brothers and sisters to pieces. The few brave champions who stand up to expose the nature of the dialect, men such as Ezra Pound, Father Alberto Rivera, Charles Chiniquy, Senator McCarthy, President Alan Garcia of Peru, etc., often find themselves compromised and violently removed. More often than not, they are replaced by quisling puppets of the elite. These mannequins deliberately stir up old antagonisms so that the real enemy behind the tall grass can continue to stalk unseen. While the sorcerers meet in their secret lodges to laugh and jig, misery reigns abroad, as it has for millennia, and the world does not appear to be getting the picture. You can't seem to understand that, although the aristocracy's many lieutenants undergo a cosmic makeover, as the decades pass, the controlling cabal never changes its spots. Eustace Mullins was the colleague and biographer of the great Ezra Pound. He was one of the first American authors to speak out against the Illuminati and name names. They remain concealed behind the facades of orgs that you erroneously believed act independently, such as the Fabians, Reds, Democrats, Republicans, Nazis, Masons, Templars, Opus Dei, CFR, and so on. The Royal Institute of International Affairs is called Royal for a reason. It's not only a reference to the folks at Buck Palace. It's time for you to learn who your true enemies are. They are not the pompous demagogues seen on TV or in the New York Times. They are goons who occupy lower tiers of the Great Pyramid. They are drunk with desire for power and will do anything to rise in status. The elites know all about the avarice of their self-serving agents. They use that greed to great effect. The elders at the top of the power pyramid blind the world with a certain kind of light. They are Luciferians, after all. They occupy the white squares of knowledge and keep you on the black squares of ignorance. That is how the great geopolitical game is played. They have a myriad ways of making sure you don't stray from the pen they've created for you and your erstwhile fellows. This is a quote from John Dean from his book Worse Than Watergate. He says, Paul O'Neill, who is a member of the National Security Council as well as being in charge of fiscal policy, made a shocking revelation to Ron Suskind that not only are public events scripted, but even cabinet and other meetings within the White House with the presidents are scripted, where everyone but Bush has speaking parts. Bush's role is merely to nod or listen expressionlessly, aside from his occasional cryptic or cynical comments. Michael continues, but they don't have to work too hard, because your own anxiety makes sure you stay right where you are. It's this inner trepidation that has opened the lidless, bloodshot eye that watches the world from on high. The surveillance cameras are your friend. They give you the security you lack within. You love it when a new enemy arises. That gets you off the hook. Now you've got someone to blame. It's a very old story. You are not interested in finding out that these enemies are created, just as so-called allies are. You don't want to face the fact that you and your children are victims in a global snuff drama, or that what you witness every evening is a well-funded ritual, an act of sorcery. This is from Dennis Healy, who is a British politician. He said, "World events do not occur by accident. They are made to happen, whether it is to do with national issues or commerce, and most of them are staged and managed by those who hold the purse strings." Here's a little quote from Benjamin Disraeli. "There is no error so vulgar as to believe that revolutions are occasioned by economical causes." So Michael goes on to say, "Two rabid pit bulls tear each other to pieces in a pen. Two rabid countries, factions, sects, or cliques do the same thing on the world stage. Do you think there's a difference? There's none that I can think of. Who built the pen? Who trained the cocks and the pit bulls? Who's taking your bets? That's your homework, folks. You'd better get your heads down and find out just what the king's horses and the king's men have been up to while you slept. And while you're at it, you might inquire why most people around you could not care less about the state of decay. Are such people in a worse state of decay internally? Are they mind-controlled? Have they been inebriated or anesthetized into stupefied apathy? Do they cry and vote only to be comfortably as opposed to uncomfortably numb? The people never give up their liberties but under some delusion," says Edmund Burke. And then Vernon Howard says, "The man who does not know what it means to be under psychic hypnosis is already under it." What a great advantage for leaders that the people do not think, says Adolf Hitler. In any case, don't worry. The problems are not difficult to understand or solve. It's not rocket science. It's merely a question of treachery, hypocrisy, duplicity, and outright megalomania. It's simply a matter of wolves in sheep's clothing and, oh yes, order ab chaos. The so-called left-right political spectrum is our creation. In fact, it accurately reflects our careful, artificial polarization of the population on phony issues that prevents the issue of our power from arising in their minds. That's from the book, The Occult Technocracy of Power. And then Yuri Lina says in his book, Architects of Deception, "When the right-wing Freemason is finished, his left-wing brother takes over." Saddam had the maniacal extremists under control. He was not living in a stasis field like them. They could not squeak under his regime, and he was no threat to America or Britain. But that did not matter. Like so many puppets, he was expendable. His strings were sliced from above, and down he fell like so many before him. Big Brother put him into power, and Big Brother took him down. That is how the geopolitical game is played. Think we're joking? Geoffrey Griffin is one of America's first researchers to expose the British-funded hidden hand of conspiracy. Saddam was merely a temporary pawn on the grand chessboard of the royal geopolitical strategists and their imperialist orgs, such as the IMF, World Bank, Bank of International Settlements, and Council on Foreign Relations, etc., that function independently and collectively, as did the old British East India, Virginia, and Massachusetts Bay companies. It was his Islamic enemies in Saudi Arabia and Iran that directed the Bushes and the Carlyle Group to take him down. And take him down they did. Obedience brings in the bacon. Bush, the oil man, knows who calls the shots. The game of Oppo Sames continues age after age. There's a conspiracy, all right. Follow the checks and follow the oil. Guess where it leads? Each of them grow fatter on the economic ruin of the countries they financially support. You imagine that Uncle Sam rules from the White House, right? You had better think again. Uncle Sam has a gun to his head and a blade to his throat. The vampires have drained him of his life force and left him so weakened that he can no longer defend himself against their death blow. Uncle Sam's fate depends on the whim of the Machiavellian princes of evil in Saudi Arabia, London, Rome, and New York. They give orders to their Fabian cronies at the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Royal Institute of International Affairs, and Georgetown University, and they decimate more of your so-called rights. Hell, you don't know what you lost in the War of Independence. You don't know that you lost the War of Independence. You don't know that you are famous for losing the wars you win. Yep, afraid so. You're gonna have to fight that one again, and this time win. This time your weapon of choice must be knowledge. Margaret Mead says, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed individuals can change the world. Indeed, It's the only thing that ever has. So let the briefing begin. You have to know your enemy and why it operates as it does. You have to know how the science of deception works. That's right. If you truly want to even the score, you'll have to know as much about your enemy as it does about you. This point can't be made any clearer. General Sir Archibald Wavell says, "The elementary principle of all deception is to attract the enemy's attention to what you wish him to see and to distract his attention from what you do not wish him to see." And then from Douglas Adams in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, he says, "The president's job is not to wield power himself, but to lead attention away from it." Dr. John Coleman was previously a British MI6 agent. He's the author of several monumentally important books on the Fabian Society, Tavistock Institute, CFR, and Roundtable groups. Saddam, like Prime Minister Chamberlain of England, Archduke Ferdinand of Austria, King Gustav III of Sweden, Tsar Nicholas II of Russia, President Nasser of Egypt, and so many others, was removed and sacrificed. But pawns, too, are among those who will not see the dialectic at work. Those of you who, due to the disease of ignorance, continue to take sides in this skull or bones fiasco. It is time to realize that it is your complicity and ignorance that permits the sorcerers to destroy sovereign nations, obliterate civilizations, and expertly silence anyone who exposes their corruption. Well, now you know something about the sorcerers. But what of the magicians? What about your true teachers? Unfortunately, they are always disagreeable threats. They try to awaken you from your tranquilized delirium, but their counsel can't get through because you have lost the ability to listen. Your receptivity is blocked by a myriad of imbecilic ideas and false allegiances. You have identified with the objects of your hate, as you have been taught, and have received a rickety form of psychological security as a result. The true teachers speak of the beauty of change, spontaneity, mutability, curiosity, free thought, and new perspectives. They tell you to get up on top of your desks and look at the world with new eyes. Oh, Captain, my Captain. But that kind of advice threatens your paper-thin sense of security. So, when the teacher speaks, your brain goes on the blink. You prefer the smell of vomit. You adore the drivel of pre-digested cliches, platitudes, and half-baked rebuttal. You crave the parroted soundbites from the smart-ass, double-speaking, shock jocks, and talking heads on TV. An attack on your silent and unseen contract with the sorcerers strikes at the root of the self-induced hallucination that has you believing all adversaries and pathogens are external in origin, and that the problems that befall are political rather than psychological in origin. But that is okay. You can live out this lie all the days of your lives if you so desire. And you will do so, because it gets you off the hook. But sooner, the matter will come into court and be settled all right. The brief is being prepared now as you read. But it's comforting to know that when your insecurity gets too pronounced, there is always the mosque, synagogue, chapel, and church. Yep, there is always God, the ultimate fix after all. After all, it is in His name that you act. Blow them all away, wasn't it, Mr. Falwell? As wise men know, inner sadism so easily finds its way out into the 3D world. Those infected with emotional and psychic epidemics are at the helm of the ships of state. They are steering humanity toward a crevice. If we go over the edge, don't blame the ocean. Are they alien or are they human? Are the navigators men or demons in human guise? Are they born of the womb of the world's ignorance, sadism, and sickness? Yes, they are. And you are living in their forensic filth. You don't care or notice because they have provided the necessary bread and circuses for your senses, appetites, and edification. They are overjoyed with their experiments and world of emotional and psychic prostitutes. They don't offer you truth, but they do offer crude forms of worldly power. And that is what you have been taught to rank over the love you have never known or received. The author of America's Secret Establishment and Trilaterals Over America, Anthony Sutton, exposes the Council on Foreign Relations, Skull and Bones Society, and other anti-American orgs. Your opinions are baked daily for you by the media and served up hot on TV. And you will believe what they tell you. It's not what you think that matters, but what Larry King, or Oprah, Limbaugh, O'Reilly, and other Jesuit stooges and British agents tell you that does. Their Orwellian talismanic mantras guide your life. Danger, terror, we must give up liberty for freedom. We must. Okay, but just remember that the walls that keep would-be enemies out also keep you in. And this is from J.A.C. Brown, Techniques of Persuasion. He says, some authorities take the view that we are all virtually at the mercy of mass media and baleful methods of group simulation, whilst others have suggested that brainwashing and similar techniques available to modern mind manipulator are not only well nigh irresistible, but lead to real and permanent changes in political or religious outlook. If such beliefs are well-founded, the outlook for civilization as we know it is not pleasant to contemplate. And then here's something from Edward Bernays in his book Propaganda. If we understand the mechanism and motives of the group mind, it is now possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without them knowing it. So much for your utopian global village. Run, rabbit, run. Keep riding the snake. The tragedy of 9/11 may have shaken you up, but did it wake you up? That is the question. The sorcerers know exactly what to do should you awaken from your delirium. They have their tranquilizers ready in abundance because they really do care for your safety and security. It's the same old song from the time of the Philadelphia Convention of 1787 to the Congress of Vienna in 1815 to this moment with George Bush's Patriot Acts. But don't say you have not been told what is going on, because you have been told. It's all in black and white. All you have to do is listen. Here it is from David Rockefeller from his book Memoirs, page 405. He says, for more than a century, ideologic extremists at either end of the political spectrum have seized upon well-publicized incidents such as my encounter with Castro to attack the Rockefeller family for the inordinate influence they claim we wield over American political and economic institutions. Some even believe we are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will. If that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I am proud of it. Rockefeller also addressed the Trilateral Commission in June of 1991 when he said, we are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march towards world government. And then from Zbigniew Brzezinski, the Grand Chessboard, he says, democracy is inimical to imperial mobilization. Or how about from Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, Bilderberg Group member? She says, it is difficult to re-educate people who've been brought up on nationalism to the idea of relinquishing part of their sovereignty to a supranational body. And then from Richard Garner, quoted from the CFR Journal, Foreign Affairs, an American quarterly review in April 1974, he said, the house of world order will have to be built from the bottom up rather from the top down. It will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion, but in the end, eroding national sovereignty piece by piece will accomplish more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. And then, of course, George W. Bush had a little Freudian slip during a BBC interview when he said, our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. And then George Bush Sr., an interview with Sarah McLendon, December 1992, he said, if the American people had ever known the truth about what we Bushes have done to this nation, we would be chased down in the streets and lynched. And then from Kenneth W. Royce in Hologram of Liberty, the 60 Minutes interview of Janet for the kids, Reno was a joke. She recently told a group of feds, you are part of a government that has given its people more freedom than any other government in the history of the world. And then from Janet Reno, an attorney general from 1993 to 2001, said, to stop terrorism and organized crime, the American people must give up some of their personal freedom and privacy. Or Tom Ridge, from Pennsylvania governor, said, civil liberties is one of the most precious gifts that we give our citizens. Or Gary Hart, U.S. Senator, there is going to be a continuing trade-off between security and liberty and freedom going forward in the 21st century. And then we got Steven Steisenhauer, who was an FBI agent. He said, is there a chance that some of your civil liberties may slip while we guarantee the security of this country? Maybe, maybe. So let's ask a question. Are you in pain? Do you ache with the stress of living? Well, don't despair, because their syringes and happy pills will make you feel so much better. You won't have to inquire why you're in pain or discover that the only love you have is for power. You'll never find out that your stress is caused by frustrated hunger for power. That kind of truth is buried beneath the lies you tell yourself that make you believe you desire love and peace. Lies that are a foundation of your ego and your world. You gave up wanting love a long time ago. Power lust has taken its place. But you have never noticed this about yourself, and neither have the leaders you place in power. You and they are self-binded and self-murdered. Blame, denial, denial of denial, justification, and control is what you're about. You stab at yourselves in the darkness of your ignorance, but soon, as old Dorian Gray discovered to his horror, the blade might pierce your heart. Then what? Then it all ends. The lies, fakery, self-delusion, and bold-faced debauchery. In the great social metascript played out again and again, some looming boogeyman is dangled before you, and it's lights, camera, action. Year after year, decade after decade, century after century, the status quo remains the same. The proof of the inside job is before the world and in plain view. The facts are there, and nothing is concealed. What does the graffiti say? Simply this: what your government does abroad today, it does at home tomorrow. It's not a Jewish conspiracy, but a Judite conspiracy. But who are the Judites? Isn't it time you found out, rather than keep trusting headlines and the grossly misinformed? Did you know the Pope in Rome and his cardinals, bishops, and priests are Judites? Did you know that the Queen of England and her dynasty are also Judites, and these groups are made up of European Gentiles? Families of this devilish sort have a long history. They are not secondary architects of control. They are the prime movers who know how to divert attention where they want it to focus. Her servants are everywhere. The Bushes and the Schwarzkopfs, the Colin Powells and the Rupert Murdochs, the Thatchers, Geldofs, Greenspans, Kennedys, Clintons, Obamas, Bidens, etc., squat down on their worthless knees before her silver sword to accept her knighthoods for services rendered and for covering up her family's dirty linen. What a travesty. This is from David Icke, Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster. He says, after all, this is the same diabolical crown that 200 years ago punished Irish and American rebels and patriots with agonizing death. The Queen of England made Bush's military chiefs Colin Powell and Stormin' Norman Schwarzkopf honorary knights of the British Empire. G.H.W. Bush is also knighted for services rendered. Yep, it's time to look up the meanings of agent provocateur and fifth columnist. It's time to root out the smirking Judases sitting at your table, America. This comes from Dope Incorporated. In the years 1919 and 1920, two events of critical strategic importance for Britain's opium war against the United States occurred. First, the Royal Institute for Foreign Affairs was founded. The purpose of this institution had been set forth over 40 years before in the last will and testament of the empire builder Cecil Rhodes. Rhodes had called for the formation of a secret society that would oversee the reestablishment of a British empire that would incorporate most of the developing world and recapture the United States. This comes from the same article. The Anglophile portion of America's upper crust joined the fun. The case of Joseph Kennedy, who owned his British contracts for liquor wholesaling to the Duke of Devonshire and later married his daughter into the family, is notorious. In some respects, more revealing is the strange case of Robert Menard Hutchins, the president of the University of Chicago from 1929 to 1950. Hutchins had American citizenship, but was so close to the British aristocracy that he became a knight commander of Her Majesty's Venerable Order of St. John of Jerusalem, swearing an oath of chivalric fealty to the head of the order, the British monarch. Kennedy's unswerving loyalty to the British monarchy was rewarded. His daughter Kathleen Kennedy married William Cavendish, the Marquis of Harrington. Harrington was the son and heir to the 10th Duke of Devonshire, who have run British politics since the days of Elizabeth I, while serving as ambassador in Britain. Joseph Kennedy was made an initiate of His Majesty's Most Venerable Order of St. John of Jerusalem. Joseph Kennedy Jr. and John F. Kennedy were trained at the London School of Economics, an institution founded by the Fabian Society, dedicated to training and recruiting foreign cadre as future British agents within government, business, media, and educational posts in their countries. The Kennedy brothers were trained by Fabian Society executive member Harold Laski. So the black nobility, The Setian Atenists, ensconced in London and other European cities, made sure to implant their agents in the Middle East. These royals and their obedient agents transcend street-level politicians, or street-level political parties, rather, and ideologies. However, they are quite capable of using political demagogues to get their way, should that be necessary. Knowing this, why isn't action taken? Why are the guilty ones allowed to continue wreaking havoc on the political stage when hundreds of researchers have exposed their dirt, when hundreds of books record their atrocious offenses against humanity? Well, the psychologists and sociologists of merit have been telling you why for years. You are disassociated. You have infantile amnesia, and you inhabit an abstraction that is in the pseudo-life. You are dead to the real and alive to the simulacra. You are outer-directed and always on the go, racing headlong towards your graves as if eager to get to them. You've replaced experience with the reaction and intimacy with performance. Your thinking is autistic, narcissistic, and masochistic, and you're in denial of your denial. You use your pain to gain attention and perform good deeds, mistaking those silly acts for true virtue. Your ambition and preoccupation is an avoidance of inwardness. You compete to prove you're better and that you matter. You adore the clutter, noise, overstimulation, and endless domestic minutiae because it distracts you from attending to your dharma. You crave relationships because you have none with yourselves. You want children because by your 20s you are sick of yourselves. You crave more so you can feel rich. Deconstruction, divestiture, and psychosomatic catharsis mean nothing to you. All that matters is acquisition, competition, attainment, and reward. The earth can suffer, but that is all right. As long as you succeed and get hold of the power you secretly desire, nothing else matters. Are you still confused? Do you want to know what these words mean? They mean that you are unaware that you are unaware. They mean that you have given up the right rulership of yourself. They mean that you have become totally dependent on priests, politicians, medics, and corporations telling you what to think, believe, and do. Actually, it's not freedom that you want. Oh no, you're scared to death of that. What you really want is freedom from freedom, and Big Brother is itching to let you have exactly what you secretly desire. This is a quote from Esther Villar, The Manipulated Man. Freedom is the last thing he wants. He functions, as we shall see, according to the principle of pleasure in non-freedom. To be sentenced to a lifelong freedom is a worse fate than lifelong slavery. To put it another way, a man is always searching for someone or something to enslave him, for only as a slave does he feel secure. So what does it all mean? It means that you desire anything and everything that fulfills your senses, while rejecting and avoiding that which would fulfill your soul, given that you have one. And most of all, it means that you know only your idea of reality, but not reality itself. You just don't notice this travesty because everyone around you is in the same mess. You're guided by the misguided. Your ideas of reality conflict with their ideas, and therefore no true intimacy or relationship is even possible. You are not miles apart. You are ideas apart. And so you have hatreds, enemies, problems, stress, suspicion, and confusion. And you're aggressive because, like infants, you insist that reality take the shape of your preposterous ideas. It won't take it on, so you get more hardened, frustrated, and aggressive as time goes by. You're destructive towards others and primarily towards your own self. You envy and despise those with better ideas, but make friends with anyone who corroborates and endorses your infantile and contradictory ideas. Those colleagues, workmates, priests, pastors, and gurus. You don't realize how these maniacs have poisoned and infected you with their sick memes and ideas. Well, guess what? Toxic people can't talk with angels. Toxic people can't download truth or know wisdom. Their perverted brains are capable only of receiving mental infections from higher up, spiritual pornography to darken the mind and sicken the heart. Your leaders, the most toxic of the lot, are the self-murdered. They are possessed by something dark and vile and are eager to spread their disease. They won't stop until the entire world is sodden and infected. Is that what you want? Do you want to be infected in this way and be like them? You must do, because there you go. Once every 4 years, scrawling your mark on the box, voting the parasites into office over and over again. You always adore living conformists and dead rebels. It's just as well that the infection that rots the brains of millions has not to be found in Beethoven, Handel, or Vivaldi. It sure was not part of Bach, Dali, Escher, Dürer, Blake, Rilke, Bregel, or Marguerite. Not bloody likely. They were the shining ones, the servants of truth, and their kind has always been amongst you. They walk close to you, but you've not felt them as they walk where you walk, smile when you smile, and weep when you weep. You don't feel their immeasurable love for you. That can never be expressed in words. They know all about you. How come you know so little about them? This is from William Blake. Troubling I sit, day and night. My friends are astonished at me. They forgive my wanderings. I rest not from my great task, to open the eternal worlds, to open the immortal eyes of man inward, into the worlds of thought, into eternity, ever expanding in the bosom of God, the human imagination. Or how about from John Keats? I am certain of nothing but the holiness of the heart's infections and the truth of imagination. What the imagination seizes as beauty must be truth, whether it existed before or not. And then this is from Oscar Wilde in De Profundis. Still, I am conscious now that behind all this beauty, satisfying though it may be, there is some spirit hidden of which the painted forms and shapes are but modes of manifestation, and it is with this spirit that I desire to become in harmony. I have grown tired of the articulate utterances of men and things. The mystical in art, the mystical in life, the mystical in nature, this is what I'm looking for. No, you don't know or care. You don't hear the voice of sanity above the cacophony of the world. Your chums on Capitol Hill and in Hollyweird have made you immune to truth, and you will give up your very lives in their wars in order to preserve and justify the anti-life they have brewed for you in their reeking cauldrons. You lie to yourself when you say that your ideas are true. Are they true? You were breastfed those ideas by your parents and school teachers and by priests and politicians. Now you water them with your own juices. You don't want to be free from these transmitted ideas that stand between you and the real. The megadeth, genocide, and blind fanaticism is normal phenomena in a sick world of abnormal people committing the worst crimes towards their very own selves as well as to others. Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? I can tell you exactly where they are. This is a quote from Carl Jung. A great change of our psychological attitude is imminent. That is certain. We need more psychology. We need more understanding of human nature, because the only real danger that exists is man himself. He is the great danger, and we are pitifully unaware of it. We know nothing of man, far too little. His psyche should be studied, because we are the origin of all coming evil. No, the servants of truth can come and go. Their counsel doesn't matter. They are irritating and seem so dark and negative. You want to live in a one-season world, and you will do so. The global village is being built as you read, and you'll be delighted to hear that the ride to it will be full of entertaining distractions. However, just remember that the train might not stop where you think it should. The train might chug right past that utopian mirage. You might have to disembark somewhere much less appealing. But what of that? You're not interested in studying the map. The tickets were going cheap, and you've reserved first-class seats. You don't want the fun spoiled by doom and gloom merchants, right? Your own parents may have neglected your need for tenderness and care during your vulnerable years. So you become a disciple of power and death? You weren't told that there is a heavy price for living inauthentically. You were never warned about the consequences of living unconsciously. You don't know that civilizations have come and gone and that the present civilization is ready for meltdown. You are not prepared to deal with real tragedy and can't see beauty in endings. That is for people who know how to think, not merely what to think. It's for the servants of truth who have learned life's profound lessons. And from Bernadette Devlin says, to gain that which is worth having, it may be necessary to lose everything else. The emotionally mutilated taught you to despise your need for the care that they were incapable of imparting. You grew to hate your desires and needs. You displaced your antipathy for these deceivers to wallow in self-hate. Then this hatred transformed into identification. You worship fools and liars, but despise yourself. Inwardly, you writhe in guilt and shame because you have negated your own precious selfhood. After a lifetime of beating yourself over the head, you find that you have no love to give. You were not able to lose your own identity in mom and dad, so now you get a chance to do so with Big Daddy. But he won't give you love either, because he too is an apostle of death. He too has murdered himself and put power in the place of love. He's pumped up with each person or country he crushes and humiliates. Did you not get a great thrill when Donald Trump fell? Were you not silently elated? Did it not feel great to see your side triumph? Out came your bumper stickers and little flags waving in the wind. This is from Matthew 5. Blessed be the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. What is worse, you leave your spirituality impoverished, children, little recourse, but to repeat your mistakes. Your institutions knock the spirit of rebellion out of them and replace it with hypocrisy and conformity. You hack through the organic learning processes and force them into schools to be educated. What a tragedy. They're goners from that point on. They're welcomed to the machine, but utterly lost to themselves. Their ignorance and freedom of thought, their doubt and vibrant, inherent, unique intelligence, lethal to your fraudulence, are eviscerated with surgical skill. They soon learn how to perform for rewards and to jump through hoops as you do. They too have become experts in self-deception. They too have learned how to be psychic cripples and mutilate the self-esteem of the dependents they gain power over. They also learn to think necrotically and behave passive-aggressively. You've taught them that love is nothing and possession is everything. So memorize this fact and make it gospel. Never in your life, in no place, and at no time have you ever seen a child. What you see are slaves to tyranny, crawling on their knees behind a devious smile and a rotten carrot. Once upon a time, at home or in school, you realized that a difficult choice was before you. You discovered to your soul's horror that you were being asked to conform to narrow, insane, artificial molds and to relinquish your self-will. At that time, you made the choices that have shaped your future and destiny. Quietly, you chose the way of servility. You chose to conform in order to get along and receive society's rewards. It was a simple yes or no choice. If you chose the latter, then you are a child of the true Holy Spirit. If you chose the former, you have nothing to do with that Spirit. Do you really believe that your sick priests and pastors serve Jesus and the Holy Spirit? Well, they don't. They themselves conform and demand that you do the same. What they want and what they teach is the pure antithesis of the message of the true Holy Spirit. They invent the very hells they fear. They are the very hell they fear. But you pay their way because, after all, they expertly endorse and reinforce your own abhorrent ideas about life. Lucifer's business is booming. The creatures of death and decay are presiding because your world is dying and turning rotten. These misleaders are merely the maggots and parasites one would expect to find thriving on necrotic tissue. They are merely symptoms, not causes. Quote from Jung, "We have lost our superstitious fear of evil spirits and things that go bump in the night, but instead are seized with terror of people who, possessed by demons, perpetrate the frightful deeds of darkness. That the doers of such deeds think of themselves not as possessed but as supermen does not alter the fact of their possession." As babies, you did not like being separated from mother. No, that was the most traumatic. You did not like having to be independent that day, and so independence has always been suspected and cursed. To this day, you associate independence of thought and action with pain, anxiety, and trauma. Like toddlers of 2 or 3 years old, you are afraid of your own fragility. You overestimate the power and strength of the father figure. You falsely believe that he possesses the strength that you, in your infantilism and impotency, have given up. Moreover, it is this fragility and lack of inner strength that prevents you from seeing the other sanely and all right. The other is an enemy, not a friend. You can't shake hands because your fist is clenched. The other is not human to be respected or regarded as an independent being with just as many rights as you. No, to you he is a threat, and your heroism depends upon his annihilation. Kill and destroy his life. That shows Daddy how obedient and good you are. This is from Buckminster Fuller in his book, A Critical Path. The world's power structures have always divided to conquer and have always kept divided to keep conquered. As a consequence, the power structure has so divided humanity, not only into special function categories, but into religious and language and color categories, that individual humans are now helplessly inarticulate in the face of the present crisis. They consider their political representation to be completely corrupted, therefore they feel almost utterly helpless. And then from Anne Grant, Essays on the Superstitions of the Highlanders of Scotland, written in 1811, She says, once people are taught to despise the modes of thinking, customs, and prejudices of their ancestors, and consider as barbarism and vulgarity all that in their childhood they were accustomed to regard as excellent and elegant, the whole web of thought and feeling is unraveled and cannot be readily or easily made up in a new form. So yes, the psychologists have already told you what's up. As they say, a child is born a blank slate, innocent and pure, simple and direct, looking for wholeness and meaning. But instead, he gets blasted with a chaotic welter of things to identify with and absorb. From the instant he is born in the pathogenic world, he is overexposed to the perverse and sick phenomena of societies in which nothing is virtuous or sacred. He meets no wise grandparents or guides, and his tranquilized, overworked parents are rarely seen. He becomes as lost and vacuous as the sick, narcissistic world into which he was born. He is overwhelmed with all the diversity, and his ego has little chance of correctly integrating. He is fractured, just as his society is fractured. Having nothing upstairs, he operates on and from the lowest narcissistic level, and will literally murder in order to maintain his empty, mediocre lifestyle. By design, there is constant invasion of the foreign elements. This is due to the connivance of your government and media that has steadily peddled the false merits of multiculturalism, diversification, and globalization for decades. In the end, there are so many subcultures, cliques, and groovy splinter sects that one has a devil of a time developing a true and integrated character. Identification with same things cannot occur. Therefore, the personality of the child is weak, shallow, and unsane. Is this not exactly the kind of meekness that the sorcerers so ardently desire? Try going into a confectionery shop to eat every kind of sweet there. You'll be sick as hell in minutes. But this is the way that you have force-fed your ego from the beginning. You are mentally obese, but you still want more. Your puppet masters at Buck Palace, Vatican, Tavistock Institute, and Georgetown University don't want you going around free, integrated, and sane. Then you are a danger to them. So they perpetually over-infuse alien cultures and mores into your overcrowded life space, and as a result, all peoples and traditions are compromised. Mention race, tribe, ethnicity, or national sovereignty, and you are looked upon as a dinosaur or an anachronism to be incarcerated or liquidated. Your masters have been preparing their 21st century Bastille to keep you and your children in order. The technomancers are slowly introducing their nightmarish global village in which you will live, not as free human beings, but as compliant, numbered sheeple in mind-forged manacles. Privacy and independence will be of the past. The sky will be whatever color your wardens say it is. They will assure you that things are safe and secure and that all is well, and you will utterly believe their lies. It won't matter that the hands that soothe your anxious brow are those mass murderers. But before we play the blame game, let's first realize that it's you who inwardly craves an externally imposed order. You bring tyranny into being, and just because you don't face that fact doesn't make it any less true. The Leviathan does not come after you. You swim into its jaws with your own effort. You have had to accept that the world is spherical, but you'd prefer it to be flat. You know that you are judged by your deeds, but continue judging politicians by their words. A bit of highfalutin rhetoric, a dollop of tasty sophistry, and off to town you run to scratch an X in the box for one more grinning psychopath. A quote from Stephen Biko. The most powerful tool in the hand of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. Like an acid, media viruses have corroded your consciousness and made you insane. A pornographic media has fragmented your children psychically so they don't know if they are coming or going. They are emotionally mutilated shards. They try this and that until jaded and sullied, they finally discover that it's all a sick joke. They seek crude power and dominance and finally crave extinction from their profound inner angst and discomfiture. Their case is critical, but you cannot fix them. You too are broken and lost. Your salvation is in the hands of the pharmaceutical orgs. You swallow their poisons to become uncomfortably numb. You ride the roller coaster in your relationships and use conflict to prick yourself awake. It's your soul that is sick. It is your selfhood that is infirm, and that is the plan. You are a perfectly operating Manchurian candidate without feeling or reason. A quote from Erich Fromm, Anatomy of Human Destructiveness. He says, One girl, hospitalized in a state mental hospital, had slashed her wrists and explained her act by saying that she wanted to see if she had any blood. One of the boys in the training school, for instance, threw rocks up on top of his garage and let them roll down and would try to catch each rock with his head. His explanation was that this was the only way in which he could feel something. He reported that feeling the pain made him feel at least something. Don't you question where your sickness, delirium, frustration, and anxiety come from? Don't you care that every box of medication bought to fill your inner void helps to finance global parasites? This is from Greg D. Jacobs, The Ancestral Mind. As a nation, we spend an astonishing $650 million per year on sleeping pills alone. 4 million Americans abuse prescription drugs and are addicted to tranquilizers, stimulants, or painkillers. This is from McDougall. Each year in the UK, more than 24,000 teenagers are admitted to hospital after deliberately harming themselves. But only a small proportion, around 13% of self-harm episodes, are thought to result in a hospital visit. Previous smaller-scale research found that people who self-harm were more anxious, depressed, and had lower self-esteem than those who don't. By way of their arsenal of weapons, schools, media, medics, etc., the architects of control have gradually but successfully narrowed and limited the parameters of your consciousness. Their real mastery lies in their ability to convince you, their inner mannequin, that you are in control of your own mental and somatic functions, your own thoughts and beliefs. In this way, they are superior to the normal bug-eyed witch doctor. This is from Fred Gates, Rockefeller Associate, occasional letter number one of the General Education Board. People yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hands. And we may ask, what is the behavior of the hypnotized person? Well, we can be sure that his sensitivity is drastically reduced and his thinking is done for him by someone else. If he is told he is Superman or Sir Lancelot, he will believe it. He will lose his inhibitions and act out his repressed desires without stint. Logic and reason go out the window. Meaning has the same value as madness. Salt can taste like sugar. He will commit criminal acts that he would normally avoid when fully conscious. He will not feel guilty for destructive acts and will walk off the edge of a cliff if told to do so. Truth could be hollered into his ears ad infinitum, and yet he will remain vacant and indifferent. You'll be met with a placid grin and all-knowing expression. Nothing you do breaks the trance. Get the picture? T.S. Eliot said, humankind cannot bear very much reality. Nothing lasts forever, and this world of moral delinquents has little time. The Maya saw four creations come and go, so there's nothing new when it comes to cosmic dissolution. This is a quote from Priests of Egypt to Solon. There have been 1,000 holocausts, which have occurred in 1,000 ways and will reoccur, both by fire and by water and by many other means. This is from Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, 18th century thinker. Goethe had a premonition of his decline of the West. Even in October 1801, he remarked in conversation that spiritual emptiness and lack of character were spreading as if he had foreseen what today characterizes the most celebrated literature of the free West. It may be that Goethe had even foreseen in the distant future the coming of an age which writers would make great profits by the portrayal of sex and crime for the masses. As Goethe said to Eckermann on 14th of March, 1830, the representation of noble bearing and action is beginning to be regarded as boring, and efforts are being made to portray all kinds of infamies. Previously, in a letter to Schiller of 9th August, 1797, he had pointed out at least one of the causes of the decline. In larger cities, men lived in a constant frenzy of acquisition and consumption, and had therefore become incapable of the very mood from which spiritual life arises. So moreover, the death of the rotten and corrupt is certainly not to be lamented. On the contrary, it is a time of profound joy. Have you examined the state of your inner republic? In that narrow, sterile, superlit asylum, your dark guardians come and go, bringing reports that tell of terrible inner ruin and what must be done to restore peace and sanity. But you call these agents by some dirty names. To you they are anger, fear, hate, violence, loneliness. You put up great barriers and blockades against them and turn up the racket of the world to level 10. This is from Sigmund Freud's Civilization and Its Discontents, written in 1930. He says, if the development of civilization has such a far-reaching similarity to the development of the individual, and if it employs the same methods, may we not be justified in reaching the diagnosis that, under the influence of the cultural urges, some civilizations or some epochs of civilization, possibly the whole of mankind, have become neurotic? You are like squatters hiding in a nook beneath the staircase of a wondrous mansion that you have forgotten actually belongs to you. You've been taught to fear that place. That is why you don't explore the mystery of yourself and turn instead to exploiting gurus and priests. But the time has come for you to come out of hiding. The time has come to fling open the doors and step out onto the high balcony to hear the great bells of creation ringing. You can now learn once and for all that the real war is a war on consciousness. Other brawls are merely distractions, adroitly created to prevent you from knowing this. What you get on your TV is a global snuff film courtesy of Her Majesty Lizzie in London and his holier-than-thou horror in Roma. That fifth has been designed to drain every ounce of self-will and power from your mind and heart. It's to make sure you remain hiding under the staircase, shivering with fear. You and your country can choose the way of love or the way of power. You can occupy the white squares of knowledge or the black squares of ignorance. Choice is given a man to show who and what he is. If you choose the wrong road, there is always time to change direction. But if you have chosen wrongly, then you will surely be held accountable by the higher self, the Holy Spirit, that suffers from your neglect. As a quote from Pythagoras, thou shalt know, self-chosen are the woes that fall on men. How wretched, for they see not good so near, nor hearken to its voice. Few only know the pathway of deliverance from ill. The Holy Spirit approaches, and many are worried. They know the end is approaching, and that the apocalypse, or cleansing, is at hand. Therefore, it's party to the end, and let's get smashed. Satiating the senses is the only high left. We wonder, can you find the still point in the midst of the insanity, or will you tranquilize yourself all the more? Will you edit or observe? Will you learn, grow, and take back your power? Anonymous quote here, he who takes a stand is often wrong, but he who fails to take a stand is always wrong. Is it not time to cease worm-tonguing yourself? Are you not tired of lying to yourself and accepting the lies of arch-deceivers who imply that love is found where truth is not? Well, dear friends, to find love, there must first be truth in your world and heart, and it must be unadulterated and strong. Only the uninfected, psychologically hygienic person can cure his fellows of their manifold psychic diseases. Only the knowledgeable person can raise the torch that extinguishes ignorance from the world.